Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Claus.
Morning to you. It's kind of fun to jump in and see so many of you already on board.
Smiling faces, yep.
Yeah, very good. I moved down to the house and Stephanie requested I do that, so we're going to try it down here.
Working well.
Remote command center.
He requested that you move out.
I move out. goodness.
So we get to listen to half of, is it Rochelle? Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
There we go. Now we get all of Rochelle's opinion. No.
All you get, half of her.
Where's Grayson?
Probably isn't up yet.
E-L-L-E, I think.
E-L-L-E.
So, Rochelle, did we put your name correctly on the screen?
Yep, looks good.
Oh, hey, great. Thank you.
Well, we were... I had seen Kathy Ruzma this week briefly, and she had mentioned a new podcast that she had been listening to or started listening to. And it's called The Bible Lab. And I hadn't heard of the guy or who does it, and it doesn't matter, I guess. But so Stephanie and I this week jumped on and listened to an episode or two. And pretty interesting. It's kind of like what we do here. and he presents a reading and then they discuss it. He does a little more preaching in it than I do, but it's all right. But it was really interesting. So if you get a chance, look up the Bible Lab. It sounds like he does it as a Sabbath school and records it, and then,
it's a part
he always starts with a couple of questions, and he gives his audience answer cards, yes, no, or maybe cards, and they're different colored, and so he'll ask a question, and then he kind of looks over at his audience and says, well, you know, roughly 50% say yes, or whatever it is, you know. But he asked several interesting questions. So I'll give one to you this morning that I thought was interesting. It really made me pause. And it was simple. It was, do you think heaven's going to be crowded or empty? Crowded or spacious?
I think it's like the TARDIS. It's bigger on the inside. I'm going to have my own planet. But you're welcome to come over and visit if you like.
I think there'll be plenty of room, but there'll be plenty of people around too. I think it depends on where you want to be.
Okay. Well,
the thing is, if there is no death, then eventually it'll be overcrowded. Because you'll have an infinite number of people filling an infinite space, and it gets crowded.
The question is interesting to me in a sense of, do you think a lot of people are going to heaven, or are there just a few?
Bible says few.
Bible says few.
But it also has a vast multitude.
Depends on how you look at it.
That's what makes the question so interesting to me.
A few can still be a great multitude.
If you take a look at the number of people born and died since the time of Christ, the estimate is approximately 60 billion people. And I don't know how many people before the time of Christ, but just since the time of Christ. So even if you were to take a few, it could still be a very large number.
It's true. would be a vast multitude.
But what good about, morning. It's Barbara. I think I figured out how to unmute it.
Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Hey, Barbie.
Yeah. JC's way over on the other side of the living room, but we're happy that we can have worship together.
Now, what I find interesting is I also participate in another meeting of generally older gentlemen, and of those, every single one of them has a picture and participates with video except for one. Here we have more than half who choose not to.
Technology is a scary thing, Steve. So.
It is.
Well, we're glad you guys are all here. We'll get started with our discussion today, our midrash. New technology today, so we'll see how this works. Here we are. So here's our sort of definition of our midrash. We are going to get together to look at these ancient words, look at the ancient text, but it's together in a community, so that the different dimensions of the text can be shared. As they go into your mind, you're going to respond differently than I do. Thank goodness. And we want to share in that and to get a larger sense. So, and our topic is the Sabbath, and we're doing this on the Sabbath. And so now we have the Midrash on the Sabbath. We're looking at the seven Sabbath healings that Jesus did, and here I've got them listed out for you. Last week we looked at Jesus healing this crippled woman, and seeing how the Sabbath is a time for us to examine our beliefs, our boundaries, our understandings, and to ask, are those things, as good as they are, in some way stopping us from greater things? And so, you know, Jesus crosses boundaries, the helpful and necessary boundaries that have been set up at some point in time, but Jesus chooses to break those boundaries so that, you know, somebody can be lifted up physically, socially, and spiritually, and with her identity. So one of the ideas that came out of last week's discussion. All right, so let's start with a word of prayer, and then we will get into this week's reading. Father God, we are so grateful that you sent your Son to our planet, to live as one of us, to teach, to show us what an intimate God and man relationship looks like, and to leave us these stories of containing your words and your actions, so that we can continue to emulate that. So we thank you. Amen. All right, so we will go to, still in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 14, and we'll start with the first six verses there, and that's kind of the healing part. We'll talk about those six sort of together, and then we will move into what Jesus says after that, which is also quite interesting. So if you don't mind, starting in the order that I have you here would be Ron and Rochelle, followed by Jennifer, followed by Roy, followed by Barbara. So that would get us the first four. After Barbara would be Patricia, and Sally would have the last word, verse six. Make sense? All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. All right, Luke chapter 14 and verse 1.
14 and Luke 6. Ron, what's the chapter again?
Luke chapter 14.
Okay.
So Ron does one.
So Ron is not able to unmute himself.
Okay, here you go. I got it.
There we go.
What verse are we starting?
You guys have verse 1.
Okay, 1. Now it happened, as he went into the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, that they watched him closely.
And behold, there was a man before him who had dropsy.
Roy, would you read verse 3?
Jesus turned to the lawyers and Pharisees sitting there and said, "Is it right to heal someone on the Sabbath?"
But they were silent. So Jesus took him and healed him and sent him away.
Oh. Patricia, you're still muted.
Then he answered them, saying, "Which of you, having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day?"
And they had nothing to say.
And they had nothing to say. Well done, Sally. Okay, so where is the setting here, this healing?
In a Pharisee's house.
In a Pharisee's house.
Mm-hmm. A leader.
Sabbath lunch.
Okay. Where were some of the other Sabbath healings that we've read? Where did they occur at?
The synagogue.
Okay, in the temple, some of them. This is a quiz. Where was the first one?
Outside.
Still haven't got the first one.
Oh, the first one was Peter's in Peter's house.
There you go. Peter's house. His mother-in-law. So,
got to take care of those mother-in-laws.
Yeah. Got to take care of the mother-in-laws, that's for sure. It's interesting to think about this little side note. As far as I can tell, Peter was the only married disciple. And, you know, Jesus took them on excursions all around the country, you know, for 3.5 years, and you know, Peter had to leave his wife and family and mother-in-law. And it's interesting that Jesus takes care of his mother-in-law, relieving one worries, I suppose, as so freeing Peter to travel around. It's just an interesting thought. But okay, so Jesus is healed in his disciples' house. He's healed outside. He's healed in the temple. Now he's in the house of a leader of the Pharisees. So we've seen the Pharisees a bit in these stories. They've been watching him. They have not been agreeing with how he interprets the law and his actions on the Sabbath. And here he's being carefully watched too. What do you make of him being invited to dinner at the Pharisees, a leading Pharisee's house?
My theory is it was Joseph of Arimathea, but it might not have been. It's just a guess. Obviously, he had supporters who liked what he said and believed him, even amongst the Pharisees.
Okay. So I think that's one important thing. That, you know, the Pharisees were not a unified block in their perspective on Jesus. Okay.
I think there was a certain curiosity about him.
Right, and others came. Certainly he's being carefully watched, so potentially those that were trying to trap him or do him in were there too. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you think there's a possibility that we're also dealing with people who remember him from the temple when he was 12, where he was asking such great questions?
Mm. Yeah, when he was 12, right, they were amazed at the questions and the things he was saying, right? So there might have been some people, here it is, 20 years later, roughly, who still could have remembered him from then. Good. Is there something here about... use of the Sabbath day and the fact that he's in the house of a Pharisee, prominent Pharisee with other Pharisees. So something here that might inform our Sabbath behavior, Sabbath observance, Sabbath use.
It's okay to be a Pharisee.
Say that one more time. I couldn't quite hear you, Steve.
It's okay to go see a Pharisee.
All right. It's okay to go fellowship with a Pharisee. Who current Pharisee be?
And lawyers. RSV says lawyers too. Put that in for Jim's benefit.
To me, Brian, it's interesting that I think almost all, maybe all of Jesus' healings were on the Sabbath. So, you know, whether it's an act of service, doing good, I think that's, you know, partly where we get, well, you know, if you're a doctor or a firefighter or first responder or a preacher, you know, you're going to work on the Sabbath. So. But those are all people who serve others. So.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting, I think, in this story, how Jesus takes that idea and expands it and grows it, too. But yeah, being in the home of somebody who is, or a group who's ostensibly against you, right? The Pharisees, as not uniformly, not as a block, were certainly already out to get Jesus, and Jesus unafraid to go right into the midst of them here. Okay. Even though he knows he's going to be under scrutiny. So sort of one takeaway from this is, you know, Jesus is willing to step out of his comfort zone in, you know, to the very people that are trying to get him, sort of thing. Okay.
Ron?
Yes.
I don't know that he had a zone where he wasn't comfortable because of his love for the other people. There's verses that talk about how, you know, he's not going to put out a smoking flax or, you know, hurt a bruised reed. He's basically loving and supporting wherever there's the least possible hope. And so here he's going, they invited me. I'm going to go show them what God is like here too.
Yeah, he said some other things along those lines, you know, like love your enemies, those kinds of things. Make us a little uncomfortable, but evidently for him, it didn't. But yeah, good point, Anna. Thank you. So verse 2, there was a man in front of him suffering from dropsy. Or my translation says an abnormal swelling of his body. Are there some other translations that describe this man's condition?
Edema is the one I have.
Okay, edema. We've got a nurse here. Sally, can you explain to us what an edema is?
Hey, what verse are you guys on?
Verse 2, sorry. Chapter 14.
The book and the chapter 2.
Sorry. Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14, verse 2. Thank you, Andy, for speaking up.
Why don't you just talk to the group?
Severe fluid retention.
All right, I'll turn my volume back up since you're not participating.
How do these things come about, Sally? What's the cause of an edema?
Well, it could be heart failure. Could be diet or heart failure. Those are the two that come to mind.
Okay. So is this a kind of a serious life-threatening kind of thing, or is it something you can live with for a long period of time?
Life-threatening.
It's life-threatening.
If it's your heart.
Okay. So it's interesting. Doesn't tell us who this man was. But he's there at this invited, invitation only, banquet. Stephanie is we learned about, what's it called? At Disneyland, there's Club 33. I don't know, supposedly the most exclusive restaurant in the world. And Walt Disney made this place way back when, and you only get an invitation if you're a big dollar donor or politician or something like that. I don't know. So here there's this invitation only banquet, and there's a man there who has this swelling, this possibly life-threatening disease. It's interesting that Jesus responds out of mercy to him too, even though he might have been somebody who was against him.
He must have been pretty prominent, or I don't think the Pharisees would have had him there at a gathering of the leaders when illness was such an anathema to them.
That's right. We saw that in the story of the man with the withered hand. Or the blind man, you know, who sinned, this man or his parents, right? To have a deformity or an illness like that would have made you unclean. But he's there. And Jesus responds out of mercy to him too. Okay, so he asked the Pharisees and the experts of the law the question in verse 3. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? Hasn't this question been asked already?
Yes.
Yeah. He's already asked them this before. They've already made it clear, you know, last week we read the story of the woman and they tell her, you know, go away, get healed on one of the other days. Don't get healed on the Sabbath. And so why does Jesus ask this question again?
Maybe he didn't get an answer the first time.
I think it's questions that is God. They didn't believe he was God. They didn't accept his answer. And they heard it, but rejected it. And it's simply because they didn't believe he was who he said he was.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe he was giving them the opportunity to change their mind.
Giving them another opportunity to change their mind because they didn't believe him. Hmm. Right. Remember the man with the withered hand? They kind of ask, you know, sort of, how did this happen? It couldn't be miraculous. You know, what sort of thing happened here? What kind of magic did he do? This isn't the same guy, you know, kinds of things. So they're not believing for sure. Okay. Have you ever been at a dinner party with, well, not a dinner party. Let's say Christmas dinner. You've got all the family around the table. You've got, you know, aunts and uncles, cousins and nieces and nephews. And there's always the one uncle who is kind of the fly in the ointment. you know, who says the inappropriate things, who does the inappropriate things. Do you know the stereotype I'm referring to?
Yeah. Jennifer does.
Jennifer's thinking of somebody close to her.
I'm thinking of cousins.
You know, what's funny, Ron, is if you don't know the person in your family, chances are you are that person.
Oh.
That's what Jennifer, Steve was saying about Jennifer.
Steve can't think of the one.
Oh, it's perfectly agreeable. I totally agree.
Well, Jesus is here at this dinner, and he is bringing up sore subjects. Right. They've already been over this ground, and Harry introduces, starts talking about President Trump anywhere on Orcas Island, right? What kind of response is he going to get, you know?
Well, I don't think you'd talk about Trump on Orcas Island.
Depends on what you're going to say about him.
Yeah, there you go. Good point, Gordon.
You guys know, I do participate on a Facebook group which does talk about Trump a lot. And there's about half of them who are defensive of Trump, and the other half are trying to kill him.
So Jesus brings this up, right? Like, we're having this nice conversation, a good dinner, and all of a sudden Jesus is going to just sort of change the mood here. Is it lawful to see? Now, I don't know what this means, so I'm going to ask you. Now, verse 2 says, there in front of him was a man suffering from the abnormal swelling of his body. Picture this dinner and how this man might have been in front of him. You know anything about, I mean, imagine our Christmas dinner or big dinner. Is this the guy across the table from him? But do you know how the Jewish people ate?
From what I've heard, like from talking about the Last Supper and whatever, didn't they eat for their banquet sort of reclining on their side or one of their sides, like they're on the left side so they could eat with their right hand or something? Mm-hmm. So it would be like where John or Judas were at the Last Supper would be where this guy was.
Yeah. Can you see how this guy was close to Jesus? You know, and if they're kind of reclining on some pillows or something, you know, to be in front of him would have been pretty close. Not many of the Pharisees, or some of the Pharisees, wouldn't have wanted to be that close. Ron, you have a thought?
Oh, I was just saying that it might not have been all just eating. They might have a social event where they were, you know, wandering around talking to people too.
Okay. That's a good point. So afterwards, but this man, you know, kind of, or Jesus walks around and gets in front of him, or he gets in front of Jesus or something like that. Yeah. But he's close to Jesus. And so Jesus kind of stops and raises this red flag. The polite conversation's over. He's going to get into the meat of the reason for being there. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? So going back to our Christmas dinner with the family all around the table, this rude uncle says something and the table just falls silent. Nobody knows what to say.
I find that interesting that that happens not only in verse 4, but also verse 6.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? That they remain silent. What sort of implications would that have? What do you think they're feeling, thinking that would cause them to be silent? Nothing to say.
Well, if it was me, I would be silent when I didn't know what to say.
When you didn't know what to say?
Answer.
What was that, Patricia?
They didn't have an answer. They were kind of blah, blah, blah. Well, we've been asked this question and we don't have an answer.
It's a yes, no question, right? Didn't they have an opinion?
But they probably wouldn't agree with what they think he wants.
Mm. So they care about differing with his opinion? So they're not going to respond? Students do that from time to time. We have a lot of smart students who want to say the answer that we want, and they're more interested in telling us what we want to hear as opposed to what they think about it. Is that what's happening here?
I think that maybe they could have agreed with him, but they didn't want to come out publicly and say that they were in agreement.
Mm. What would you like?
Thanks, Kathy. That kind of goes back to Steve's earlier point, that there were supporters here. And there were non-supporters here, and they didn't want to declare their positions to each other, perhaps.
What would you like to say, Ron?
Go ahead, Steve.
What would you like us to say?
You know, it's interesting because I was looking at what Anna said. You know, and the first, well, I'm looking at the King James here, so it might be different. But in verse 4, it says, and they held their peace. So it kind of gives me the idea that they had something to say, but they kind of withheld it. Whereas in the other verse, they simply could not answer him. They didn't have an answer for him. So maybe they did have an opinion. But they just kept it to themselves, and then he pushed it a little bit further by asking the question, and at that point maybe they didn't have an answer.
Yeah, I like that comment, Andy, that at first they're kind of just holding their answer, for whatever political reasons were going on within the group of Pharisees. And then later on, after Jesus makes his argument a little more, then they're just like, man, I'm glad I didn't answer earlier. Because... Come here. Stephanie's saying something, but she won't say it to everybody. Come here.
Okay, I'm just saying that perhaps they didn't want to answer him the first time because it was public, but now they're with their own, the Pharisees are just all by themselves, and he's healing possibly a Pharisee. And so that makes it different for them.
Yeah, so Jesus is, to extend what Stephanie's saying a little bit, Jesus is healing one of the Pharisees. They doubted some of the other healings. They doubted whether the other healings were real. In verse 6, when they had nothing to say, this would have been harder to doubt because one of their own is being healed in front of them. And they might have had something to say before the man was healed. They withheld their answer. After he's healed, they don't have anything to say.
Ron, I find it interesting that we're doing this story after the woman, because when he's healing the woman, he was saying, don't you guys untie your donkey and walk them to water on Sabbath? And here, instead of just taking their animal to get water, they're having to pull it out of a pit. Hmm. But it's the same illustration that he uses about taking care of their livestock on the Sabbath. And yet, it's also taking it up a notch.
Mm-hmm. 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 So Anna is moving us along. Thank you, Anna. Appreciate that. Before we get into that, though, so they remain silent. And in verse 4, so taking hold of the man, he healed him and sent him on his way. What do you make of that? Jesus heals him and then sends him on his way.
Yeah. Would that have been a problem that he would have to go to the temple and be given an okay, that he was okay?
I don't know the answer to that, but there were other healings where Jesus said that. Go get yourself checked out, He sent him on his way. Sent him where? Where was he going?
I would imagine that he would want to go and brag to all his friends about what happened to him.
Might some of his friends have been right there? I mean, you've got this dinner party at the prominent Pharisee's house. Everybody wants to be there. All the people that are worth anything are there.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Stephanie's asking whether the disciples were there at this meal or not. And I really don't know. Story. Where's this guy going? Why is he leaving?
Is he actually leaving the party, or is it where it's like, is he grateful enough that he's sort of wanting to, for lack of other terms coming to mind, dog Jesus' footsteps, and Jesus says, no, it's okay, you can go talk to other people, you don't have to stay right here. I don't know.
I think I would go the route of, when you've had an encounter with Jesus and you're changed, it's really hard to stay in the company of those who aren't changed. And so I think maybe Jesus is saying, you want to know something? They're about to boo-hoo what I've done for you. So why don't you get out of here for your own morale and go celebrate this so that your faith and your experience that you had with me doesn't get pulled through the mud by all the other people around us right now.
Thank you, Kelly. That's a beautiful description. Yeah. Go get out of here. This is, you know, people who are conflicted about what's going on and may not have the best, your best interest in mind. Go home and scoot along. Yeah. Very good.
And Ron?
Yes.
Just to put another thought out there, technically in this phrase, the word in that phrase sent him away, the word him is implied by the translators, and there's no him in the Greek, and it's if you read it without it, the phrase goes, he took hold of him, took hold, healed him, and sent away. It could be implying that the sickness went away, but I don't know. Just another thought.
Okay.
How far is away? 3 feet? 5 feet?
6 feet. 6 feet.
Sally, let me ask you a medical question again, if you're willing. This edema, how visible is it on a person?
How visible is the edema?
Yeah.
Depends on what organ is being affected. Like the liver is going to have a large abdomen. It's respiratory, we are emaciated a little bit. With heart, out of breath. And the swelling is more generalized.
So I guess my question is, would the healing have been visible on this man?
Yes.
It would have been. Okay. I'm wondering though, this sending on his way, was this like more proof that the healing was done and this man could get up and go on his own and without struggle or without loss of breath and easily?
Good point.
I don't know. It's a possibility, I suppose. That Jesus is demonstrating the man's health here. Get up and go, right? Maybe this edema is not something that's as visible, certainly not as visible as a blind man or a withered hand or the stooped over woman or the sick mother-in-law of Peter. But this interesting phrase, he sent him on his way, or possibly he sent the infirmity on its way. That's what Grayson told us. Yeah. Okay. So then the man leaves or goes, and he asks the remaining people. Verse 5. If one of you has, the NIV says a child or an ox. Does anybody else have something similar to that? Mm-hmm. Grayson, if you have your interlinear there, can you help us understand why it's either child or donkey rendered there? It has a word for child says or a donkey. So a donkey or an ox, you know, would make sense. They're more of a pair. A child and an ox are very different. So this is similar to what he asked them or states for them before. Anna, go ahead and restate what you had said earlier about the previous healing and regarding an ox.
with the previous healing where he was loosing the woman from her infirmity, his response was, you know, on the Sabbath day, you go and you untie your donkey or you untie your ox and you take them to water. And isn't it right that I should be loosing her? And yet here, instead of just untying an animal and leading it to water, you're actually pulling it out of a pit. So it seems to be upping it a notch, but it's still making the correlation because it's taking care of your animals. It's taking care of beings that couldn't take care of themselves and are your responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like your point of it's kind of upping the ante. It's one thing to untie an animal and get it some water. It's a whole nother thing to pull an ox out of a well.
That'd be an awful lot of water, though.
Growing up, my dad sharecropped some land, and he had a fellow who ran Angus cattle on the property. And he had a humongous Angus bull that he had on the property. And the neighbor across the street also ran cattle and also had a very large bull. Different breed. I don't remember what the other breed was across the street. But these two bulls would stand with their heads through the fence, bellowing at each other and pawing the ground. And the bull on our side of the fence, I don't know, I wasn't too smart, I guess, because there was a ditch right alongside the fence. And one day he's out there stomping and bellowing and pawing, and he falls over in the ditch. And this is just a ditch that's 8 or 10 inches deep. It's not very deep. And he couldn't get up. Talk about a humiliating situation. So my dad and my brothers and I got out there with a tractor and ropes trying to get this silly bull back on his feet. He must have been 1,500 pounds or 2,000 pounds. I don't know. He was a big fella. And it was a lot of work just to get him out of the ditch. I can't imagine what it would take to get a bull out of a well. We're talking about stepping up the amount of effort required from leading an animal to water. Pulling a bull out of, or an ox out of a well, my goodness. Now, if you have wells like Steve's used to, they're so small you couldn't fit a bull down there anyway. But the wells, hand dug wells back in the day, could have. Well, it's interesting here in this. Oh, go ahead.
So what you're saying is that it's easier to heal a woman than to heal a Pharisee? That it's more work?
I think you're right. I think it is.
Wow. Yeah. Where to go with that one? I don't know, Jennifer. I'm silent. I don't know what to say. We have a commentary.
Then, right?
Yeah, just jump to verse 6. It's all backwards for you. Anyway, this Bible commentary says this. Jewish legal experts debated proper Sabbath laws among themselves. If one side was silenced and unable to reply, they would be presumed to be wrong, or at best too ignorant of the law to defend their position. So there's that. And then this guy goes on to say the Essenes did not permit the rescuing of an animal on the Sabbath, but the Pharisees did. So Jesus is taking what they already believe and extending that by an analogy to healing a person. In the healing of the woman, doesn't he explicitly say that? And how much more is she worth than an ox or something like that? Here on this one, he doesn't say that. He just says, says they had nothing to say. But anyway, it's an interesting idea to in terms of persuasion, to take what people believe and then extend that in ways that they haven't in the past. And they had nothing to say.
I don't know if we covered this, but it's interesting that in other healings of Jesus, there's a response from the person being healed. And in this situation, I don't know whether or not it's intentional, but there's no response from the person that's healed. No leaping of joy, no going around telling, I'm going to tell the town, no, thank you, Jesus. Let me just be here with you. I wonder if it's because the situation they're in, it was probably a very awkward moment. And so.
No, I think you're right. It's interesting you point that out. There isn't a response here of any sort, right? He's amongst the other Pharisees, and they're kind of split and divided in their opinion. It might not have been safe for him to celebrate or to say, oh, wow, you are the Messiah, because I'm healed, you know. Jesus heals him and says, just go on and get out of here. It's all right, you know. And there's no response from him, right? So as we've been going through this story, how does this story inform our understanding of what the Sabbath is for? Does this story add to things that we have talked about, sort of the purpose of the Sabbath? And in what ways has it?
It's okay for miracle workers to work on the Sabbath.
It's okay for miracle workers.
It's okay to ask hard questions for multiple times on the Sabbath.
Well, you know, having a relationship with God, right? It's about restoration. And so this symbolized as the ultimate thing that you can do on the Sabbath, you know, it's bringing restoration, wholeness. That's what the relationship with God is. And that's part of why he gives us the Sabbath. So when this type of an act that brings that very clearly, you know, to the fore, I mean, that's like one of the ultimate things that the Sabbath can be, the Sabbath can be perfectly inhabited that way.
Okay. Good point, Andy. Right, how do we extend this? Is there sort of a principle here that we could extend beyond just the healer for us? Or maybe there are ways in which we are healers. What might those be?
Don't always expect a response. If you do something good, doesn't mean you're going to get a response.
Okay, so Helen, you pull that out from here. There's no response. There's no thank you. There's no whatever. He just goes on his way. So doing good acts doesn't always get you any kudos. Okay. What else?
Do good even to those who may or may not be your supporters.
Do good to those, even those who may not be your friends, may not be on your side, may be against you. Yeah. Yeah, because all the other healings, right? It's either, you know, these worshipers on the Sabbath, kind of the common people who had been, you know, with these infirmities. Now he's helping one of the leaders, one of the Pharisees, who has this disease. Good. So could we say that, don't limit your healing activities to those people that are easy to get along with or that are in your social circle or, but step out of that and work for healing for other people that aren't necessarily so easy to be around. Yeah. Okay.
I'm also thinking that perhaps this healing, well, with this one and the previous two that we talked about, Jesus looked around and saw someone that was dealing with an infirmity, and he called that out. The issue was basically being ignored by everyone else. So I think this is perhaps a call to truly look and see people rather than just have a sea of faces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really like that statement of yours. You know, Jesus really looked to see how people were hurting. And I'm going to go with this infirmity, this sickness, was one that was not so visible, was not visible at all. I'm just gonna go with that here, my supposition here. Knowing how the Pharisees responded to people that were ill, but Jesus could see that this man had this disease in some way that the others could not see. And so that's implies this intentionality to try to look beyond the surface of people and to find out what their needs are. And Jesus heals him and demonstrates the healing by this guy being able to get up. And maybe his friends knew he had a hard time getting around and needed assistance to walk or go up steps or something like that. Is this affected, you know, his breathing and his heart and his respiration? And now he's able to go on his own. But they might not have understood the deeper cause of that. And I'll extend that a little bit further. You know, we live in a society where a lot of us put on a good front. We put on a good, pretty veneer that, you know, we're pretty capable and we've got it together. But Jesus is able to look beyond that. Here, this Pharisee, you know, he's one of the prominent that's invited to this dinner, but he's got this problem underneath. And Jesus makes the effort to look underneath that. And, it's easy for us to look at each other or other people and say, oh, they've got it together. They have nothing that I can help them in. Or they don't have any needs. They can take care of themselves, right? Jesus looks deeper and takes the Sabbath as a time to do that, to pause in the hurrying around and you know, there are obvious needs that are easy to see, that are inescapable, when they confront us, but there are lots of needs that are hidden that the Sabbath gives us opportunity to rest from our busyness and to take time to look deeper, to consider people in a deeper way, and then to respond from our heart, as we saw in the earlier healings. You know, Jesus was saddened, or not saddened, he was angered by the hardness of their hearts. They were not responding as their heart was being moved to the needs of people. The Sabbath gives us a regular time and space in the week to do that, to pause and you know, maybe we can't do that with 100 people, maybe we can't do that with 10, but we can certainly do that with one on a Sabbath day and respond out of love and care for that person. Well, thank you for our Midrash today. We're going to have a little bit of time for some praise and prayer. And yeah, Stephanie's saying, Ron, you don't have to have the last word. Give a chance for others to chip in here. Other last thoughts before we move into prayer time?
Ron?
Yes.
A week ago, we received a call from Mike Troutman, the properties manager, that a neighbor was having an issue with my clearing out around the pond. And I didn't know how to respond to that. So Thursday, when I was out there putting some touches on the project, the neighbor came over, and he's rather unwarm individual from my perspective. But we had a very good conversation, discussed some of his appreciation for the pond and the ecosystem that was around that pond, of which I was disturbing. So he said, have you ever seen my backyard? And I said, no. So we went over to his place, and it's a beautiful, well manicured, landscaped yard. And I could see the two of us sort of had some commonality in our interests, although his was from the ecosystem. I think we have developed a 1.5 hour conversation together that have developed a friendship. And he admits, he says, I'm not very outgoing. He says, I stick to myself, which I have had previously concluded. I'm hoping this will develop into something better than the original controversy I thought we had.
Well, that's a huge answer to prayer, Roy.
It is.
Already, that's been a huge connection, crossing a big chasm there.
I didn't know how to solve the problem. He came with the answer. And that's probably because of family prayers outside as well as my own. How are we going to resolve this issue?
Wow. And wow, thank you for sharing that, Roy. That's amazing. We will add that to our list of praises. But other praises and prayer requests.
Michael was going to join us today, but he ended up coming down with a bad cold yesterday, a little bit the day before. And he was still hoping to be here this morning, but evidently he's still resting.
Okay. Jennifer also reminds us of Stephanie Schroeder, needs healing. That's still true. Pray for that. Mike sent me a list from the prayer group. Branson needs our prayers for strength and courage. He's struggling through a breakup and is hurting. Pray for peace for him. Mike, can you help us out? Remind us who Branson is? Remind me.
Maybe not. Hey, Ron, Brandon is one of the Micah House guys.
Brandon,
yeah, sorry. And he's in the Micah House. He has a son with this lady. I don't know if they're married or not, and was really anxious to get back together with him, but she didn't want to continue the relationship. So he went down to see them, and he's really just emotionally invested in this lady and just really struggling with it. So I don't know where it is now, other than I know he's off island trying to salvage that, and just really hurting right now.
Yeah, fantastic. Pray for restoration in that relationship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
A praise, Ron, for the flowers yesterday.
Bright flowers have gone out around the island. People picked them up and took them home, a little different than our usual delivery of flowers. But yeah, praise for that.
I'd like us to remember our friend Dave. He's in the Monroe prison and he needs our prayers. They're on lockdown, and I just ask for strength and guidance and just.
Yeah, so Dave, who's in Monroe prison. Yes. Now, the lockdown is because of the virus, is that right? I imagine, if the virus spreads in prison, that would be disastrous. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Recently, I've been thinking about some of the prisons who have been deciding, who to release and this kind of thing. And thinking about some of the prison residents who, thinking about that man who maybe was falsely accused, and has been in jail. And because of this disaster, somehow he's released early or he's let out, and the kind of joy that someone like that might have, or the sadness of maybe someone who, had pretty much paid the debt to society or was maybe given an early release. They were going to be released because of this situation, and then it was rescinded, mm-hmm. And then I was thinking this morning about, what it would be like, to be under house arrest. Some people they have to stay at home, and they have some kind of device to make sure they stay at home, and how, in some ways, we can empathize with that, And so hearing the other comments, and Jesus talks about, did you visit me when I was in prison, And so it's, of course, we have so many people in our prison system, so we need to pray for all those families and people affected. But it's nice to hear some of these testimonies.
Yeah. Courtney, how's Devin doing? Can you give us an update?
He's doing okay. Still doesn't really have vision in his left eye. He has to go back again next week for a laser treatment and another injection. He's got so many things going on. I'm not going to lie, it's pretty hard. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. He wanted me to put his sister, Micah, on the prayer chain because she's having like a severe mental breakdown. So he really wants her on the prayer chain.
This is Devin's sister, Micah? That's
her name? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pray for that. And how are you holding up? Are you getting a lot of long walks in?
Yes. Yeah.
Praise the Lord for that.
Goodness.
Also, a huge praise and prayer for Grayson, who's moved to Boise and started up a new business. For that.
Ron.
Yes, Tom.
Want to just put my brother's name on the list. He starts another round of chemo here in a week or so.
Now, is this because the cancer has returned more, or was this kind of a regularly scheduled kind of thing?
No, the cancer's back. So I was asking him if it would really knock him down to do the chemo, and he said, well, it's kind of he called it a smart pill. He says it destroys the cancer cells but doesn't seem to affect anything else. So that's a positive about it, I guess.
Well, good. We will.
Ron, I heard from Kathy Vandenberg this week, and Marta has had chemo and radiation. She doesn't seem to be worse, but the tumors are still the same.
Wow.
And, Ryan in Southern California has two more CT scans this week that tend to determine whether he's able to have the bone marrow transplant within the next few months. So he needs our prayers to have that fungal infection in his lung completely gone.
Yeah, he's also a young father, right? So,
like, three children. He's 34.
Yeah. So Marta and Ryan both with children and children at home. So another prayer for our community leaders, inside and outside of the church. Yeah, it's an unprecedented time for leading in our community, and difficult decisions, complicated decisions with very little information, relatively, and lots of pressure from lots of different sides to make decisions about what our community does, how we move forward from here. I also have a praise for the Mason bees and all the blooming apple trees. Promise of delicious fruit in the fall. And a prayer that our Sabbath morning prayer group can resume soon.
I have an idea to add in.
You mentioned the bees. I read an article about a month ago talking about the Asian hornet, that it's a big thing. It's like almost 2 inches long. And they've cited it, and they're trying to do kind of tracking and stuff within Pacific Northwest, like in Washington, San Juan County, and was it Skagit County, and places like that. So keep your eyes out for the Asian hornet. Sorry about that.
Oh, wow. My goodness. So is that something that we could put up bait, or hornet bait for, or traps?
I don't know.
Any last praises or prayer requests before we?
Yeah. I have an industry friend who a year ago and his wife were going through a tough time, and it became tougher, and they're signing divorce papers later this next week. So just prayer for that family and how it goes.
Yeah, that's rough. Pain's real. Yeah. Let's pray together, and then we'll turn things over to Grayson. You bet. Okay. Lord,